Liberty. Music now.
Oh, we had all kinds of fun yesterday. Yeah. Today we're going to continue the main topic, I guess, of today. It's going to be about the X11 fork. Don't worry, I know some of your eyes just glazed over, but it's an important thing to talk about because it's going to end up affecting pretty much the entire internet, whether you know people want to admit it or not. And it shows a symptom of a lot of issues with not just today's political climate, but putting politics where politics don't belong. Anyways, welcome back to RLM Radio, Liberty Tunes. I'm Uncle Bonehead. Let's kick off things right. Let's do a little bit of something different. A little different than what I usually play. Let's do Unchain the Dawn.
It's loud, a cage of gray. 9 to 5 steals my soul away. Paper walls, a scripted lie. Dreams of color trapped inside. I've played their game, worn their mask. But now I'm done, freedom's my task. Heart beats fast, I'm breaking through. Chains of routine, I'm cutting you. Feel the rush, the night's undone. I'll greet the dawn, I've just begun. Dreams in black and white, fading slow beneath fluorescent light. Boss's drone, but I hear the call. Art's my fire, I'll risk it all. I'll trade their rules for a brush in hand. Build my world where I'll stand. Chains with a final note. Left the desk where my spirit broke. Stepped outside, the air feels new. Colors burst in every hue. No more clocks to steal my breath. I'll chase the sun, defy this death.
Kick the door, I'm out of the grind. Corporate cage, I'm leaving it behind. Paint on my hands, I'm sketching my fate. No suit, no tie, I'm slamming the gate. Free spirit rising, I'm bold, I'm loud. Dawn's my canvas, I'm breaking the crowd. Monotony's dust, I'm the spark, the art. Rebel with a pulse, I'm owning my heart.
Unchain the dawn, I'm flying free. No more shadows holding. No desk, no dread. This is me, I'll light my own way.
stroke a chain I break. Every hue a risk I take. Sky ignites, my fears unwind. I'll greet the dawn, I'm redefined. My spirit sings, no more clipped, I've grown my wings. City fades, I'm wild and bold. Art's my truth, my story told. Every dawn a brand new start. I'm the flame, I'll free my heart. Heart beats fast, I'm breaking through chains of routine, I'm cutting you. Feel the rush, the night's undone. I'll greet the dawn, I've just begun. Unchain the dawn, I'm flying free. No more shadows holding me. Dance in light, I'm painting my soul. Rebel heart, I'll take control. No death, no dread, I'm alive today. This is me, I'll light my own way. Break away, break away. Ooh, yeah, yeah. Rise and shine.
Yeah, I'm tired. It's Saturday afternoon. Stayed up way too late last night, like normal. I got into it's an old TV show called La Brea, and it's about the La Brea Tar Pits. It's a sci-fi show, and it's kind of interesting. It's cheesy, but it's not Sharknado cheesy. So, you know, it was all right for the time, but it got me interested. I don't know why, but it is what it is. Anyways, we're going to do a little bit of news before we continue talking about the Exorc port. I'm adjusting my chair. I was sitting way too high. Okay, a Brazilian comedian has been handed a prison sentence of over 8 years for a stand-up routine, setting off a storm over the growing use of a state power to penalize speech that challenges cultural taboos. Leo Lenz, known for his provocative style, was convicted by a federal court in Sao Paulo, Brazil, for allegedly promoting intolerance through jokes delivered during a live performance and later circulated widely online. The show in question, titled Pertubador, which means disturbing, was posted to YouTube in 2022 and had reached more than 3 million views before it was taken down in 2023, following a judicial order prompted by a complaint from prosecutors. In their case, officials claimed that the material denigrated a wide swath of Brazil's population, including Jews, people with disabilities, the elderly, gay individuals, black citizens, indigenous groups, northeastern Brazilians, those living with HIV, evangelical Christians, and others. Now, to me, that sounds like an equal opportunity comedian, and there is nothing wrong with that. If you could offend everybody with a joke, you're doing it right. Come on, people. Okay, back to the story. Citing the scale of the video's reach and the perceived harm of its content, the court framed the ruling as a defense of, quote, human dignity, arguing that the right to speak freely must yield when it allegedly infringes upon this principle. Sorry, but you're wrong. You have the right to say shit. It's other people's rights to not get offended by it or to be offended to it. But that your right ends when you infringe upon theirs. You don't have the right to be offended. It's not a right. Citing the scale of the video's reach and the Okay, I already read that. The judgment labeled Lynn's comedy as a verbal violence and claimed it contributes to a climate of social division, a financial penalty of 300,000 reais, which is around 54,000 pounds, was also imposed for what the court described as damage to the collective moral fabric. Sorry, but it's not the job's court. The court's job is not to protect moral fabric. Your job is to protect and enforce rights. Lynn's legal team swiftly denounced the sentence and announced plans to appeal. His lawyer issued a sharp rebuke of the court's decision. Quote, watching a comedian receive the same punishment as someone convicted of drug trafficking, corruption, or even murder, all because of jokes told on stage, is deeply troubling, end quote. Among those speaking out against the verdict were fellow performers who warned that such actions risk eroding democratic freedoms under the guise of protecting sensibilities. This is where we're going to run into a very large problem, is when you start trying to criminalize jokes. You then turn the courts and the political system into a joke upon itself. So, that's just flat out dumb. How many people here in the audience is using a Android phone? Or do you have a Google account? I'm willing to bet it's probably everybody has a Google account, at least. You may not be using an Android phone. You might have an Apple phone, which you ain't that much safer. But a cybersecurity researcher was able to figure out the phone number linked to any Google account. Information that is usually not public and is often sensitive, according to the researcher. Google and 404 Media's own tests. The issue has since been fixed, but at this time presented a privacy issue in which even hackers with relatively few resources could have brute-forced their way to people's personal information. I think this exploit is pretty bad since it basically is a gold mine for SIM swappers. The independent security researcher who found the issue, who goes by the handle BruteCat, wrote in an email, SIM swappers are hackers who take over a target's phone number in order to receive their calls and texts, which is, in turn, can let them break into all manners of accounts. Now, I'm not going to be able to read the rest of the post because it is a paid members-only post for 404 Media. This is getting annoying. So just take that into consideration. You got a Google account. You realize that there are adults alive today that have had a Google account attached to their name from the day that they were born. Let that sink in for a minute. There are people alive today, adults, that have had a Google profile built on them their entire life. One company knows everything about you, probably knows more about you than your own mother, your own father, your own husband, your own wife, hell, even you. Probably knows things that you forgot. Stop giving these companies your data. Just stop. I mean, yeah, do they know more than you want them to? Especially me. I've had multiple Google accounts. I think I've probably had 15 or 20 of them by now. But they're all for different things. But there is one that they've known pretty much everything about me since about 2005. But they don't know anything more than that. Thankfully, I was born long before Google was even thought of. But it is what it is. Just do your best to change. God, I am tired. This show may be shorter than the planned 2 hours. There is a high-stakes auction where 15 million people's DNA is the product. Facing growing scrutiny over privacy and legal challenges, genetic testing firm 23andMe is heading into a second auction after its first sale attempt fell apart. Wait a minute, 23andMe is a genetic testing firm? I thought it was a dating app for people from West Virginia. Or Washington, D.C. Oh, shit. Anyways, former CEO Ann Wojcicki, now aligned with the California-based research group, has submitted a $305 million bid to reclaim the company's core asset, a massive collection of consumer DNA data. Her offer exceeds the previous high bid by close to $50 million. Regeneron Pharmaceuticals had initially been declared the winner of the first auction with a $256 million proposal. The decision was quickly contested by Wojcicki in federal court, where she argued the auction process had been skewed. This legal fight prompted all parties, including 23andMe, Regeneron, and Wojcicki, to meet before a bankruptcy judge to negotiate new auction terms. The revised structure agreed upon this week in St. Louis lays out a sequence of offers designed to resolve the disputes that marred the first round. Wojcicki's group will lead with a $305 million opening bid. Regeneron will then be allowed to respond with a minimum offer of $315 million. If they do, Wojcicki and her partners can counter with a higher bid, followed by one final opportunity for Regeneron to match or exceed it. While Wojcicki's legal team pushed back against a rule that gives Regeneron the final bid, they accepted the terms as a fairer setup. "We won't like the last look rule," said her attorney, Sushil Kirplani, in court. Even so, he added, the new process offers a more level playing field for his client and the TTAM Research Institute. The dispute revolves around control of one of the largest privately held genetic databases in the world. 23andMe amassed its data from more than 15 million users through direct-to-consumer health and ancestry testing. Despite strong brand recognition, the company filed for bankruptcy in March, having failed to convert its consumer base into a sustainable revenue stream. Multiple stakeholders, including unsecured creditors and shareholders, have endorsed the updated auction process in hopes of a more transparent resolution. The outcome carries broader implications for data protection. The unfolding sale of 23andMe's vast trove of consumer DNA data should serve as a wake-up call about the serious risks of treating biometric information as a commercial asset. Millions of individuals voluntarily submitted their genetic material to the company, often believing it would be used strictly for personal health insights or ancestry tracing. Now, amid bankruptcy proceedings, that deeply personal data is on the auction block, where it may end up in the hands of the highest bidder. While the courts negotiate terms between bidders, the individuals whose DNA is being bartered have little to no say in how their data might be used, shared, or monetized moving forward. Okay, so here's what's wrong. Number one, this article is slanted. And here's where it's slanted. It says millions of individuals voluntarily submitted their genetic material to the company, often believing it would be used strictly for personal health insights or ancestry tracing. That is only partially true. They voluntarily submitted it, but they also paid the company to do it. Number one. So they paid them to collect their DNA for these specific things. So if the other company bids and wins this data, the genetic material, I would think that it would be probably in their best interest to destroy the genetic material unless they are going to do it for the exact same reasons that the people paid 23andMe to use it for. Personal health insights or ancestry tracing. Anything beyond that, I think you're playing with fire, number one. Ideally, the most, if the courts were going to be doing this the right and fair way, they would order a stoppage of the sale and destruction of all of the DNA material. Because you're playing with people's identity there. And it scares me that not only is just your privacy considered not even a right anymore, but now your biometric material is not. That's creepy as hell, and people don't realize how creepy it is. Okay, I was talking in a Matrix room earlier this morning, and I brought up the story here that I covered last week or the week before about the Texas law enforcement using surveillance tactics and cameras and shit to track a woman going to another state where it's legal to get an abortion, and then they prosecuted her for the crime of the abortion where it's illegal in Texas, but it didn't happen in Texas. The abortion happened in a state where it's legal, and the Texas is prosecuting her as if it was a crime in Texas. And you can't do that. You have to be processed in a for a crime where it's actually illegal at. Just because you go to another state or another country doesn't mean it's still illegal. If it's illegal over there, it doesn't mean that it's not illegal. Or that is, yeah, there's, yeah, you get what I'm saying. And I also thought about remembering back in 2021, I don't remember when, but it was during COVID, and they were reporting on the news that they were using people's cell phone data to track them when they left the house and going after them and giving them tickets and arresting them here in the United States. That shit's illegal. Nobody batted an eye. Nobody said anything. You can't use people's cell phone data to track them and prosecute them for a crime without a warrant. And nobody was talking about the warrants. And a couple of people mentioned it, and all of a sudden, the stories disappeared. They stopped reporting on it. And There was no word on whether or not law enforcement got in trouble for that shit. And I highly doubt that they did. It's, pardon my French, fucking creepy. We are so close to the pre-crime stage of Minority Report, that documentary, the Minority Report. And it's freaking... No. People have a right to their genetic DNA. It's theirs. Yeah, they gave it to 23andMe and paid 23andMe to use it for a couple of specific things, to trace their family history and find out their health and health issues. That doesn't give 23andMe the right to sell their freaking data to somebody else, even if they go out of business. If they go out of business, first thing they should do is destroy the genetic DNA. They should protect people. People are not cattle. I'm sorry, but you big tech and you coders and you scientists and all that and politicians, we're not fucking cattle. One of these days you're going to realize that. I didn't mean to make that sound like a threat, because I'm not. I'm just, you know, trying to be realistic here. Ah, okay. The Canadian bill that wants to make privacy rules optional for politicians. Who had this on your bingo card for 2025? I think pretty much everybody. Oops, wrong tab. The Canadian government has once again sidestepped public debate by embedding broad privacy exemptions for political parties into a piece of unrelated legislation. Bill C-4, framed as a response to economic challenges, includes clauses that effectively remove political organizations from the reach of both federal and provincial privacy laws. The changes are not just forward-looking, but they apply retroactively to May 31st, 2000. They go back 25 years from now. If passed in its current form, Bill C-4 will entrench a system where political parties have free rein to mine personal information with minimal transparency and zero independent oversight. The retroactive nature of these changes adds a further layer of concern, effectively erasing any liability for past misuse. Canadians deserve better than opaque policy matters that trade their privacy for partisan convenience. See, this is... One of these days you're going to understand. When it's not a left versus right thing. It never was. They gaslight you into thinking it is. To Republican versus Democrat, liberal versus conservative. No, it's a state versus you. They don't care what your political affiliation is. They only want to control you. They only want to make you a slave to the system. One of these days, we're all going to figure that out. And I certainly do hope that we do all figure it out someday. But I'm going to play a song. Attempt to yawn a few more times. And then I'm going to come back and do a couple of more stories about open source projects. And then we're going to move into our main topic. So here we go. This is Steelheart.
run deep beneath his iron skin. Battles fought, but the wars within. Echoes roar from fields of dust and fire. A soldier's soul caught on barbed wire. He stood alone, a statue cold and still. But now knees bend, can't break his will. Nightmares fade, he's clawing through. A spark ignites where shadows grew. No more walls, he forged his way. Steel heart beats, he's here to stay. Steel heart, he rises from the grave. Turns his scars to a shield so brave. Pulse ignites and stronger than before. Not just alive, he fights for more. No chains of pain, he carries the flame. Stand up strong, protectors his name. Ghosts of brothers lost in endless night. Haunts his dreams, blurs wrong from right. Armor cracked, he's borne the weight too long. But in the silence to rewrite this song, he mends the breaks. Let healing start. Turn iron cold to a beating heart. Steel heart, he rises from the grave. Turns his scars to a shield so brave. Pulse ignites, is stronger than before. Not just alive, he fights for more. No chains of pain, he carries the flame. Stand up strong, protectors his name. Fields of ash where hope once burned away. Left him hollow, a debt to pay. But he stands tall, no longer just survive. Breathe through the pain, keep dreams alive. For every soul still lost in fear, to be the strength, they'll find him here. Go! Steel in the veins, but it's melting to rust. Trauma's a chain about to break the trust. Fought in the dark, now forging the light. Scars are his map, he's ready to fight. Not just a ghost, but a wall they can't breach. Rising for them, his heart's gonna teach. Iron to gold, it's a beacon, a guide. Protector reborn to turn back the tide. A story to reclaim. Every tear fuels this endless flame. Hold the line where shadows fall. This heart of steel will answer the call. No more running from the man he's been. To face the storm, let the fight begin. A warrior's vow, he guards the weak. Through every wound, it's peace he seeks. The past is forged, the future's unseen.
Data and rock your freedom. smashed glasses worth misused. A woman mourned where echoes played. A soldier stood, his scars remade. Eight souls lost in narrow night. Found the strength to chase the light. Roots run deep, but they can break. Every fall's a chance to wake. Through the storm, a truth takes hold. Change ignites, turns dust to gold. Flames of change, we rise as one. Our best will be. She quit the grind, her art set free. A quiet voice broke silence, this decree. An addict torched her past in flame. A man knelt low to heal his name. Each bore scars, each bore a fight. Turned their pain to radiant light. Flames of change, we rise as one. Our best will be. From shattered dreams to steel reborn. From muted fears to a new dawn sworn. Regret dissolved, addictions page burned. Pride laid down, love's lesson learned. Eight paths crossed in time's embrace. Found their truth in every trace. Yo, flames unite! We're the Phoenix crew! Eight lives flip, watch what change can do. Toxicity smashed out, it's dust. Regret's a ghost, we're healing the rust. Arcs are pulse, his voice breaks through. Sober and strong, he's humble and true. We're the parable, the spark, the fight. Change is the fire, we're owning the night. Flames of change, we rise as one. Seed we sow, every break a chance to grow. Through the ash our stories blend. Change is life, our hearts ascend. Lit a wildfire's call. Eight stood up, refused to fall. From dust to crowns, from dark to day. We carved our paths, we paved the way. A parable sung for all to hear. Change your life, rise past the fear. Flames of change, we rise as one.
Before we get too much further, I should probably say go check out the policereport.com, I think it is. And if you're interested in doing a, you know, putting some content on Real Liberty Media, RLM Radio, feel free to contact Sound Minds at what is it? Media Matrix 8? You want to make me go look. I know better. La, 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 la. Yes. Media Matrix Media 8 at proton.me. And yeah, you too can get on air, voice your free speech, and get things off your chest. So let's move into the Xorg X11 thing. The forking of Xorg and X11, critical components of graphical interfaces in Linux, may seem like a niche issue, but it has far-reaching implications for the tech industry, open source software, and the internet, which affects everyone, even non-Linux users. So, what's happened? Xorg is an open source software that implements the X11 protocol. I'm trying to say this without glazing your eyes over, but just bear with me. It manages how graphical interfaces, you know, like the actual windows and buttons and menus on the screen, are displayed on Unix-like systems, including Linux. A fork means that developers have created a new version of the software. In open source, you can create forks if you don't like the way something's going or the direction that a project is going. You can fork it and take it a different direction. Well, that's what happened with Xorg and X11. The fork in this thing is called X11 Libre or X Libre, and its intent is to keep it alive after neglect. See, here for the last, oh, I don't know, 7 or 8 years maybe at the most, there's been a new push for this thing called the Wayland, which is a set of protocols, not actually a server type thing like Xorg is. And Wayland's been around for like 15 years. And they can't even settle on what the basic protocols are. So if you're using Wayland, you're going to be making your own protocols, no matter what distribution of Linux you're using, or BSD or whatever. But that's the problem. The people that are working the most on Wayland are employees of Red Hat. And Red Hat Enterprise Linux is also the same people that work on Xorg. They actually pay their employees to work on open source projects. So they've pretty much, there's nothing confirmed, but they've pretty much been given direction to ignore Xorg, let it die, don't patch it, don't do anything to it, just let it die, work only on Wayland, make Wayland work for Red Hat. So the dude that ended up forking Xorg, he's like pretty much the only one that's been submitting patches and new features and fixing issues with Xorg for like the last 2 years. And they've ignored it. Haven't put anything. He said he's done like 900 issues and patches just in 2024 alone. And he finally got fed up with it and said, fuck it or fork it. He forked it. And since he forked it, it is on record that there are Red Hat employees that went through, deleted his account from the Xorg GitLab, deleted the forks repo on GitLab, and went through and deleted all of his submissions for fixing bugs and issues for the last year, all 900 and some of them. And they're claiming that it was because, you know, he had in the new fork, he strictly says that it is non-DEI, and there is no, absolutely no code of conduct, because he does not want politics in the software. When politics gets into the software, it dictates what the software can do, and people start putting politics over the actual software. And he's not wrong. Free software is meant to be for anybody, regardless of what your politics are. If you make a piece of open source software and you disagree with Nazis, you can't get upset when Nazis use your software. That's your issue. And vice versa, if Nazis create open source software, they can't get upset if, you know, people of color use their software. That's not how open source works. Open source works, depending on the license, you use the code, you're free to change the code, but you have to submit the code back for everybody else to benefit. I mean, it's pretty black and white. It's not hard to understand if you read the licenses. So anyways, here's why it's going to be an issue. Linux powers the internet. Linux runs about 80% of web servers, cloud infrastructure, Amazon Web Services, Google Cloud. The list goes on. Critical systems like banking and healthcare platforms. Changes to Linux graphical systems like Xorg can impact the stability and security of these services, which everyone relies on for online shopping, streaming, or secure transactions. Now, you're going to hear from the Wayland crowd that Xorg is insecure, and that Wayland is more secure, blah, 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 blah. Now, you think that maybe the fact that you're ignoring patches and bug fixes might have something to do with that? Just let that sink in. This is forced obsolescence. So anyways, cross-platform impact. X11 is used beyond Linux. It's in systems like BSD and even parts of macOS via Xquartz. A shift away from Xorg to alternatives like Wayland could disrupt software compatibility across platforms, potentially affecting Windows and macOS users indirectly through app development and remote desktop protocols, remote desktop tools. So let's say, Wayland is being built for newer hardware. Businesses, especially big tech and data centers and servers, are not going to switch to Wayland, which is untested. And I believe it's still considered alpha software, even though it's been around for 15 years. I don't think they've actually got a actual real release yet. But Red Hat and Ubuntu are forcing people into using Wayland as by default. Wayland doesn't work on a lot of old software or a lot of old hardware. I can't do what I do with Wayland. I use two computers for my day job, and I use one keyboard and mouse. I have to use a piece of software called Barrier, KVM software, and it's so I can use the same keyboard and mouse to control two computers. I can't use it on Wayland. There are alternatives for this software on Wayland, but they don't work. There's one that is really close to working, but it doesn't, you can't use the clipboard between the two computers. And that's what I need it mostly for, is to use copy and paste links and information from one computer to another. It doesn't work. I can't use Wayland. There are lots of current distros that do not want to use Wayland because it's not stable. There is a lot of major issues with Wayland, but yet they are forcing it upon users because, I don't know, Red Hat is controlled by IBM, and I honestly don't know why. I know Ubuntu is like basically little Microsoft. They're beholden to them for some stupid reason. But it's just dumb. And the thing is, now that Red Hat and Ubuntu and several other places have gone out of their way to ramrod the new fork and saying that it's not going to get any help. It's not going to get any, people aren't going to jump on the bandwagon. If you go look at Ex Libre's GitHub, there's like 50-some forks already, and there is over 2,000 followers of the software. That's a significant amount of people. There are lots of businesses saying that they are not going to Wayland. They have to stay on Xorg and X11. And so they are going to end up switching to Ex Libre. And I think it's funny. I really do. Another reason, corporate influence on tech. The neglect of Xorg and the push for Wayland highlight how large corporations can steer open source projects, potentially prioritizing profit over community needs. This could set a precedent for other tech areas like web browsers or mobile operating systems, affecting user choice and software freedom. That's already happened. Look at Google Chrome. What's going to happen with it now that it's been ordered to split off from Google? Accessibility concerns. X11 supports critical accessibility features, like screen readers, better than Wayland currently does. If Wayland becomes a dominant without addressing these gaps, it could harm users with disabilities across platforms, including non-Linux systems, by limiting compatible software options. Where's that DEI? Where's that diversity there, you Wayland zealots? The potential impact on the tech industry and society. The Xorg fork and the shift to Wayland reflect deeper issues of corporate control, potential corruption, and ideological battles in open source software, which could ripple across the tech industry. Corporate takeovers. Large companies like Red Hat, which is owned by IBM, and Canonical, which runs Ubuntu, influence Linux development by funding developers and prioritizing projects that align with their business goals first. This can sideline community-driven efforts like Xorg, reducing user choice, which is what has happened. If corporations control key open source projects, they could monopolize standards, forcing other companies like app developers, hardware makers, to adopt to their preferred technologies, potentially increasing costs for consumers. kind of almost reminiscent of Microsoft and their Embrace, Extend, and Extinguish. Anyways, some claim that corporate employees within open source communities act as moles, deliberately neglecting projects like Xorg to push alternatives like White Wayland, which may benefit their employers' agendas. For example, posts on X suggest Red Hat and Canonical are undermining Xorg to control Linux display systems, which they are. Okay, look at it this way. It was, what, a year, maybe 2 years ago, Fedora, the Linux distribution Fedora, said that they are going to eventually drop Xorg and go Wayland only. In case you didn't know, Fedora is Red Hat Enterprise Linux upstream. That is where Red Hat gets their code from, is Fedora. And who works on Fedora? Paid employees by Red Hat Enterprise Linux. Political radicals in open source communities may push ideologies, diversity policies, or anti-corporate rhetoric that alienate contributors, as seen in the X11 Libre Fork's controversial anti-DEI stance. This can fracture communities, slowing innovation and affecting software reliability. Okay, so I just got to point this out. In the tech world, in the industry, with the open source, and they're always screaming about DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, they're always trying to push out some section of individuals that do not agree with them. That's not very, that's not being inclusive. DEI is anti-DEI. And what they don't understand, well, I think they understand it. It's just that they don't want to admit it. The global impact, if Linux graphical systems become less reliable due to rush transitions to an incomplete Wayland, it could destabilize critical infrastructure like servers or medical systems, impacting global services. Reduced competition in display protocols could lead to proprietary solutions dominating, raising costs and limiting innovation in consumer tech from smartphones to desktops. Now, I know a lot of you that are Linux zealots in my audience are going to say, well, you don't need to have a desktop protocol to go run a server. No, you don't. But I'm telling you, most of the people in the server aspect, period, use remote desktop to get into a server. Yes, you can do 100% of every kind of server administration and server use on the command line. But most people are not at that technical level. Even sysadmins. They remote desktop in and do it from there. Because it's just easier. I've already gone through all that. The Red Hat Enterprise Linux ownership and Xorg neglect. Corporate money, add that. Pretty much done that. Excuse me. Okay, we're going to play a couple of songs here. I want to play Beyond the Veil. This is a Mare Nocturne persona, and it's about what's beyond our life. There's got to be more out there. So check this out. It's kind of a slow song, but it makes you think.
whispers of ether, my soul begins to sail to places far beyond where no mortal has prevailed. The veil of life so thin like morning mist it fades. I leave behind the chains, the shackles of the shades. With every step I take, the world grows ever wide. A universe of wonder where time does not abide. Beyond the veil, where shadows fall away, in this dance of light and dark where all fears decay. Cosmos, hear the songs of stars. In this endless dance, I've journeyed so far. The echoes of the past, the whispers of what's to be. In this sacred silence, I'm finally free. No longer bound by earthly ties, I rise above with fearless eyes. The veil is parted, I've crossed the line in this eternal divine. I've touched the face of infinity, felt the warmth of the divine, in the heart of the cosmos where all truths align. I've learned the secrets of the night, the lore of the day. Beyond the veil, I've found my way. Beyond the veil, where shadows fall away, in this dance of light and dark where all fears decay. I am more than flesh, more than bone. In this realm of souls, I found my home. As I return, the veil now thin, I can't.
Built a throne on silent tears. Pride stood tall, a brittle rein. Left my kin to bear the strain. Crown I wore turned cold and thin. Now I see where I've been. Echoes call through time's decay. Guilt's a debt I'll face today. Dust falls soft, my kingdom's frail. I'll rewrite this lonesome tale. Stone ruled my world but ruled alone. Children's eyes once sought my light, turned away in endless night. Mistakes I built, a hollow tower. Now I'll seek a softer power. Crown of dust, I'll lay it low. Weight, I carried the load, but family's gold, I'm switching the code. Humble my steps, I'm knocking on doors, mending the ties, I've broken my wars. No king, just a man, I'm raw, I'm true, love's my reign, I'm starting anew. Crown of dust, I'll lay it low. Voice trembles, I'll mend the past. Family's bond, I'll make it last. No throne, no lie.
warmth returns where cold once ruled. I'll hold them close, my soul's retooled. Legacy shifts from dust to grace. Lines of love on this old face.
The internet computer, I don't know if you know what that is, but it's the internet computer is it's a Web3 type thing. It hosts secure network resident code and data, build web apps about big tech or without big tech and current IT. Applications are immune to cyber attacks and unstoppable, capable of processing tokens and can run under exclusive DAO control, build Web3 social media, games, DeFi, multi-chain apps, secure front ends, ledgers, and enterprise apps, and AI models. TCP/IP connected software, ICP hosts software. ICP is the internet computer. I'm still trying to understand it, but it's basically a blockchain that you host stuff on. Now, their big claim to fame here recently is a thing called Caffeine. And it is a AI on the blockchain. And I have yet to find any explanations on how it works. Like, where is the LLM at? I want to know where the LLM is at. You can't just say it's on the chain. An LLM requires a data center and power. So it's got to be hosted somewhere. Is this your personal LLM? Is this an LLM that everybody is using, the same LLM? Yeah, they've got this thing where they do a demo of it, and the guy's chatting with the LLM, ask it to build a website. It builds a website, an app for it, and a database, blah, 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 blah. It's all online. And I get that. But where is it working? How is it working? It's obviously got access to your private keys if you're the only one that's able to interact with it. If something goes wrong and the AI is giving false information or incorrect answers, you gave your keys, your private keys, to an AI. You trust that AI to keep your private keys private. This the whole thing just smells to me, even when you watch anything about it. I've watched 5 or 6 videos about it now. Not one of them explains how it works. They just use the marketing language of it's on the blockchain. It's sovereign. It's your sovereign AI on the blockchain. No, that's not explaining it. If you can't explain it to tell people how it works, it's not real. I mean, you watch this demo, and the guy does like 5 or 6 apps, you know, has it right 5 or 6 apps, and the crowd in the audience are clapping away, you know, like you're watching an Apple tech conference, and nobody asks how it works. I'm sorry, but no. If this thing was as big and as great and as they say it is, why do you have to dig to find information about it? This should be reported everywhere if it's real. But in typical quote-unquote Web3 fashion, it's all just marketing speak. No explanations. And it makes absolutely no sense. So I'm going to cut this episode short. I'm going to play one last song and then release it to the Kraken, the airwaves, back to the music Krakens, and let it play random stuff. But I'm beat. I don't feel good. I feel weird. I feel like my sugar's high and its sugar's low, both at the same time. And I'm hungry. I haven't ate. And I'm hot. And I just don't feel right. So, anyways, this is going to be Hammer On Down, Jimmy Jackknife. And then we're going to release it to the AI, the algorithm gods for music.
Through the dark, the asphalt screams beneath me. Every mile, a story of our dreams left to bleed. She's waiting at the line, her patience worn and thin. I can't let this love die, can't let it end. The engine roars, my heart beats in sync. Every turn, she's counting down the days, her love in division. I see her in every headlight, in every lonely night. Gotta make it back to her, can't lose the fight. The tires burn, the road's my confession. Every mile, I'm fighting for redemption. To save what once was, get my move on, gotta groove on, gotta hit the road now, hammer on.
but it feels like the end. The road's my enemy, my only friend. She's all that matters, she's my reason to run. I'll break the dawn.